Welcome to CCWC Live Blog Talk. I'm your host, Lorian Robinson, and special thanks to Michael Phillips for our musical introduction. We have with us today Sonia Aileen. She is the editorial director for All Careers and Lifestyle of Black Enterprise Magazine, and she is also the author of Good Is Not Enough and Other Unwritten Rules for Minorities. Sonia, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you for having me.
Now, in your role, you have an opportunity to meet so many diverse executives at all levels. And actually, I thoroughly enjoyed reading your book. I found it very insightful and helpful. But, you know, here are the facts. In today's state of affairs, there's a small percentage of minorities on corporate boards. There's also a small percentage of minorities in the CEO role of Fortune 500 companies. The same goes for the number of diverse executives in senior management positions within corporations.
Right.
Now, your book indicates that diverse executives get locked into what you call mid-level positions and never move to the upper-level positions because they're not aware of these unwritten rules. So let's start with getting some insight from you on the unwritten rules. So I'll ask you my first question. What are three unwritten rules based on your observations that hinder mid-level and senior-level executives of color from advancing in their careers?
Well, the first one, and its primary, is culture, not understanding the culture, because that is going to determine how you succeed in an organization. So you can liken a culture, if you want to use a metaphor, it's almost like coming onto a basketball field with a baseball bat. So if you don't understand what the tools are, if you don't understand what the rules are in an organization, then you're not going to be able to perform at optimum. And so the other piece, too, and you might want to call this 1A and 1B, is to be able to help you understand the importance of your culture is it's important to have a mentor. So, we hear the word a lot, and sometimes I think it's a little overused because it's so freely used, but it's honestly the single most important thing that a minority can do or any person can do as they enter an organization, because that is the person who understands all of these unwritten rules in the organization and can point you in the right direction so that you can figure that out. The other thing is, you know, working hard is not necessarily working smart. And one of the reasons that candidates are able or employees are able to move from entry-level positions into mid-management roles is because it's really required for them to do the work. And once they do the work, they can pretty much and they're successful, they can pretty much escalate pretty quickly. So it's the same principles that you learned in school or you learned growing up when your parents just said, all you have to do is work hard. And so you work hard, you're going to get the A. And a lot of times we transfer that mentality into the workplace. But when you get beyond the mid-level position, it requires a lot more than just working hard. Your profile, who you are, how you're liked, how you present yourself, those are all the things that are going to determine whether or not you succeed at a high level in the organization. And so then the third thing is perception is reality. So, you know, branding we hear a lot of people talking about, and the truth of the matter is everybody has a brand, whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not. The challenge for minorities in an organization is how well are you managing your brand and how are you perceived by the people who are going to help you move to the next level.
In your book, you say in the workplace, there are three kinds of workers. There's an A player, which represents 10% of the workforce, mm-hmm. B players, which represent 25%, and then C players, which represent the majority, 65%.
Right.
And you also go on to say that the C player is the one who does just what the job is required, no more, no less. So my question is this. Okay, I go to work, I get all my work done, any project they give me, I finish on time, I get good performance evaluations, I stay under radar, I don't get in anyone's way, then I clock out and go home. Now, based on your analysis, what kind of player would I be?
Oh, you're a C player, and C players are important to the organization, and I think that's where there is a little confusion. They're important because if our job is to make the donuts and we have people who are making the donuts every day and getting them out there, then that's of value to us. But if we need to now look at professionals who can really talk about how the donuts are made or talk about how we could expand beyond what we're actually doing day to day, then that's going to be an A player or a B player. And that player, that person, is someone who's developed their profile, most definitely has a sponsor, someone who's speaking for them when they're not in the room, and they're performing at a different level. You know, a great example of this is the whole Jeremy Lin situation. Jeremy Lin, for the most part, was a C player. He was part of the team. He was somebody who was reliable. He was there. He would, you know, do what was necessary. He had an opportunity because of, and I'm not a sports expert by any means,
You're
but there was an opportunity
job.
For him to actually showcase his talent, and that's how he was literally discovered. And so, you know, when you read all the sports analysis, they say that, you know, how was it that, you know, the manager didn't know that this talent was on the team, and, you know, how come, you know, no one knew exactly what he was doing? But that's pretty much how we operate. We're great players, but we don't work at developing the outlet so that people can actually see how great we are. So your manager isn't just going to discover that you're great. You're going to have to work at showing him what your worth is in the organization, and that's how you're going to become a B or an A player.
Well, and you said that, you know, you need the C players, and based on your analysis, 65% of the workers, they are C players. What are the ramifications of being in the C player category?
Well, you know, maybe 20 years ago for a C player, you would work your 20 or 30 years in an organization, and then you'd retire with a nice package and, you know, a gold watch. Today, and what we've seen in the last several years is because business is changing so quickly. If you're a C player that's not advancing, that's not keeping up with technology, that's not developing your skills, then when there are changes that need to be made or when there are layoffs that need to be made, the C players, the C and the D players are the ones that are the who can easily be rotated out of an organization.
In the book you state you can't get ahead if no one knows who you are. So let's say, building on your example, you know, I've stepped up my game. I'm now an A-level worker. I'm hitting it out of the ballpark, going above and beyond. Mm-hmm. Now, can I assume that if I'm doing awesome work, that will be enough to guarantee my success?
Well, honestly, you shouldn't be making any assumptions at all, and I think that's part of the problem. So you may assume that you're doing all that's necessary, and you may assume that you're hitting it out of the park, but do you actually know if that's how your boss and how your manager see your work as well? So what's going to be really important is that you are having dialogue with your boss and with your manager regularly so that you understand what the expectations for the roles are and that you understand what is required for you to go beyond those expectations.
Now, should I wait until the annual performance evaluation to have this discussion?
You should never wait. You should actually be talking to your bosses on an ongoing basis. And there are a couple of reasons, particularly for minority employees. Number one, and there have been studies on this, where white managers are reluctant sometimes to give harsh feedback because they don't want to be perceived as either being sexist or racist. So a lot of times they don't want to be extremely critical because they don't want any sort of backlash. So you really have to be assertive about the feedback that you need to be able to move your career forward. So you have to ask for specific information from your managers in terms of, you know, how could I have done this better? Was this really up to the company's expectation? What would you have liked to have seen from me? Going forward, what are three things that you think I do really well, and what are three things you think that I need great improvement on? So it has to be a very assertive approach on the employee's part.
And in your book, you mentioned the importance of visibility. How does high visibility translate into being identified as part of the company's succession plan?
Well, again, if you want to move into the senior levels of your organization, then you have to be seen as someone who the company feels great about. So we all know people who are really smart but just don't deliver well, or they don't communicate well, or they have weak social skills. And so you want to be able to demonstrate that you are strong in a number of these areas. And so you may have to, and for a lot of us, you know, particularly that person who just wants to do their work and go home, you may have to take yourself out of your comfort zone so that you are going to functions, so that you are attending certain events where you know senior-level members of your organization are going to be, and also volunteering for different task forces in your organization so that you can be seen in terms of how you perform on these different levels as well. So you want to maintain a high level of visibility for social activities, but also for the work performance as well.
And you talk about the power of execution and that being a critical component and skill that diverse executives must have and possess to advance their careers to sustain. I like your analysis. It's really good. You say there are three kind of people in the workplace: those who watch things happen, those who make things happen, and those who have no idea what is happening.
Right.
And I think at one point or another, we've all been in those presentations where someone presents, they have the glossy PowerPoint slide, but nothing happens after the presentation. How do we ensure that we are the ones in the workplace who can make it happen through execution?
Well, you have to make sure that you have a plan. You have to make sure that you have support as well, because you may have a great idea, but if you haven't done your due diligence to see who might support the idea, you know, I've heard of strategies. Not too long ago, we were interviewing a couple of senior-level people for stories that we were doing, and one of the things that came out of that interview was there's always a meeting before the meeting. And so you should never be going into a meeting and laying out your plan in front of managers and everyone else for the very first time. You may want to go out and almost canvas and see how people are actually feeling about your plan or your strategy so that you can actually get the support that you need so that your plans can get executed.
You know, it's often said that if you want meaningful advancement, you have to contribute to the company's bottom line. This typically happen in profit and loss positions that generate revenue for the company, such as, you know, being in the marketing department or the sales department. Now, many of our members, or all of our members, they are lawyers in the law department, and unfortunately, the law department often gets a bum rap and is viewed as being a cost center,
right,
similar to human resources. How can lawyers contribute to the company's bottom line to having meaningful impact that will translate into advancement?
Well, I think that some of that is changing. I think that the thought was that maybe some of these other areas were soft, but I think what we're seeing with the demands of business is that everybody is contributing to the bottom line, some way, shape, or form. And I think that attorneys in their roles in these corporations are changing that, and they are showing that there is a business connection to the legal services that they're providing, whether it's going to be saving money or avoiding something that could be costly down the road. That attitude has changed, and I think some of it's going to have to start in the schools, because I think that the training, for example, for an MBA graduate is very different of that for a JD, where, you know, MBAs are trained to think about problems and solving problems and how you're going to come up with solutions. And I think some of that training and some of that thinking is going to have to take place with attorneys in corporate roles too, because they are of value financially to the company's bottom line. There's no doubt about that.
Let's talk about career killers to avoid. You state that there are categories of things that diverse executives do or do not do that result in career derailment. Can you run us through some of those categories and maybe give us a 30-second soundbite on what these categories consist of?
You know, the number one piece is unethical behavior. I mean, there are really no excuses for that. And sometimes it can be a result of the culture. And, you know, as much as we talked about, you know, you want to be able to fit into the culture, you have to be savvy enough to know when you may be stepping too far. The other thing, which is has nothing to do with ethics, is just a basic understanding of what your expectations are for the job. There is a job description which you are expected to fulfill, but then there's also the expectation at which that job has to be performed. And so it's really important for you to understand that, because if the requirement is that you bring in a certain number of clients and you're able to do that, but you haven't been able to maintain any of those clients and the clients end up leaving the firm, well, then that's going to be a concern for your bosses, and that's going to obviously affect your evaluation. So there needs to be an understanding of what the expectation is so that you can outperform it, so that you can be seen as someone who is a top performer in your organization. The other thing is, and we kind of talked about this before, but it's so important, and it's not demanding the feedback or not getting the feedback or guidance you want. Or the other piece is not accepting it when you get it. So, you know, sometimes we are not receiving of the information that is given to us. And so that's going to be really important as well, because you're going to need the feedback to correct whatever it is that's an issue so that you can go ahead and move on in your position. And then we talked about this as well, not being able to quantify your value to the company. And so part of that is understanding what your role is and how you impact the bottom line. But the other piece of that is communicating that. And so that goes back again to the Jeremy Lin situation. You have to find communication vehicles, whether it's through your manager or through your sponsor or through your mentors or through some sort of organization within your company, so that people are, you're not just wearing the T-shirt, but other people are wearing your T-shirt as well and saying, yes, no, that person is someone of value and someone we should consider for advancement in this firm.
You discussed the importance of having a blueprint for your career.
Yes.
And we often hear, you know, you should have a blueprint. You should have a plan of action. What should this blueprint look like, and what key goals and objectives and deliverables should we be setting for ourselves?
Yeah, and I think the challenge there is, I think you have to start off knowing what that is. And I think the reason that many of us don't end up with blueprints is because we are in firms or organizations and we're not sure what it is we want out of the organization. So I think the very first thing is it may be some soul searching, it may be some coaching may be required, but what is it that you actually want from this organization? What is it that you want to get out of it? What mark do you want to leave here? How high do you want to reach into the organization? Do you want to be the CEO, or will you be happy with a senior level position? Or are you quite happy in a VP position? So I think you have to be very clear about what it is you want, understand what the sacrifices may be for that position, and understand that if you are going for the most senior level positions in your organization, that does require you aligning yourself, your beliefs, and your goals with those goals of the organization. Again, we did an interview with Audra Bohannon over at Global Novations, and she said, and it became really clear when she said it, the single biggest challenge for particularly women is ambivalence, and it's not being able to make that decision about exactly what you want to do with your career in that organization.
You discuss when you're taking on a new job or a new position that you should create a 30-day, 60-day, and 90-day plan of action on how to address challenges within, you know, that company or the department or division you'll be taking the position in. You know, what is the purpose of having a 30, 60, 90-day action plan?
Well, with whatever you do in your career, you want, and that goes back to your last question, is we haven't really been strategic about how we want to move our careers. So we kind of, you know, let things happen, and that's what you don't want to do, particularly going into a new organization. You kind of want to set a strong foundation, and you want to send a message that I'm a team player, that I'm a strong addition to the team, and you also want to be able to gain the support so that you can actually execute some of your goals. So as you're going in, you may want to identify what a challenge is that you want to be known for solving, but then you also want to make sure that, so that might be your 60-day plan, because you're going to be evaluated at the end of 90 days anyway. So that might be your 60-day plan, is that I want to make some changes as I'm going in, or I want to tackle a challenge, or I want to be known for solving a problem. But then the other piece of that is, again, because you want to be able to understand the culture, you know, there's the bylaws of an organization, and then there's the way the company does business. So you're going to have to be able to find that mentor, which is going to take time as well. So you're going to have to find someone that's going to help you go through and understand what it's going to take to be able to accomplish some of your goals. And who are the people that you should be talking to gain the buy-in for that?
And just for those who've never done a 30, 60, 90-day plan, is this a plan just for me, or before taking that position, do I sit down with the manager who's hiring me to say, you know, here's my plan of action and hold me accountable to it?
I think you can do both. And I think it depends on, absolutely depends on the organization and your manager. You know, some managers are very hands-on, want to be very supportive. Some are not. So it depends on the organization. And I think, again, part of the plan, I don't think, should be rigid. It should be fluid, just based on anything that could happen or taking into account anything that could possibly happen in that 90-day period.
You focused on the point, you gave the example of sometimes lawyers and other professionals, they go to school, get their, you know, their undergraduate degree, PhD, JD, MBA, whatever it may be, and then they go into these jobs, and then they kind of feel like, okay, I've done all that I need to do. I have this degree, and I can rest on it. Can you share with our audience the importance of going to school and continuing that education and taking seminars and executive courses?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a function maybe of the 80s when, you know, once you got that MBA, and particularly if you got it from an Ivy League school, you were set. You were golden. But now we've seen the world has changed so much. It continues to change rapidly. Technology is changing at a blink of an eye. So, and all of these things are impacting how we're doing business. Regulations are changing across the globe. And so for someone to feel that they've gotten an Ivy League degree, advanced degree, and they don't need to do any other work, it's almost just, you know, it's putting yourself in an early grave. You have to continue to educate yourself. You also have to continue to make these connections and build your network. And, you know, right now, most companies, I guess I could say, you know, most companies are global companies. I was going to say all companies, but most companies are global companies. And so if you're not, you know, learning another language, understanding what the policies are in a new country, and keeping up with technology, then you're not going to be viable for employment at all.
Can you discuss 5 skills required for senior leadership? We've already talked about the ability to execute, which you listed. Can you talk about the ability to build consensus and having a solid financial understanding of the business?
Yeah, those things are going to be really important. Because if you're talking about moving up to the senior levels of a corporation, then you're going to be responsible for managing employees and supporting them, making sure they have all the right tools, getting a sense that they trust you. I mean, all of these things are going to be really important for you to be able to move the needle. You're not at that level, you're not going to be able to move it yourself. And so you're going to have to be able to build teams across divisions. That's going to be really important. Your mentorship is going to be important with that. That's where your training, additional training, is going to be important. And then volunteering for different task forces within your organization so that you can get a sense of what the organization requires. You have to have an understanding of the entire organization the higher you go up so that you can one day sit in a position where you're overseeing all of it. So that's going to be important. Of course, understanding the financials. I mean, if you're in an area that is not a profit center, then, again, that's an opportunity for you to go and take classes so that you understand how to run a profit and loss balance sheet. So those things are going to be really important, again, if you're planning to move up in an organization because There's no way you'll be able to do that if you don't understand those. Those are basics. And so if you don't understand those things, you're just not going to be able to move forward in the organization.
And just a plug for Corporate Counsel Women of Color, in October, for the first time, we will launch a new learning series called CCWC MBA in a Day for Lawyers. And that's
wow.
going to be sponsored by Deloitte. And we're going to focus on learning how to read financial statements. And over the course of the year, we're going to focus on understanding business so that our lawyer members have this information. I think it's critical, and you pointed out clearly in your book.
That's going to be invaluable for them. That's exciting that you're adding that.
So, Sonia, you know, it's great because you talked about, you know, after we do all of these pieces, then we, you know, we have this corner office, we're making all of this money, we have all of this success. But what I liked in your book is you touched upon a concept of success versus significance. Would you explain that to our audience?
Yeah, well, what's important is, and sometimes I like to say at the end of the day, it really isn't all about you. I mean, it's great that you've achieved all these things and that you have risen to certain heights, but at the end of the day, it's really about reaching back. And I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's at the end of the day, it's about reaching back and helping someone else move forward. And I can tell you for all of the people that we have covered, they all have those stories of people who had come into an organization and didn't understand any of these rules, didn't understand what it meant to move as far as they have in an organization. But it was because somebody took the time to say, you know what, I see a talent here, and I'm going to help you direct it, and I'm going to help you understand all that you need to know so that you can, so you don't have to fall into the same traps that I did. But more importantly, I can see your progression in this company. And so it's incumbent on all of us at whatever level we are to be able to reach back and support young people and people that we see that need the help, because the pipeline is in trouble. And so if we're not, you know, with all this talk of diversity, it really is going to require us developing, nurturing, and helping those who have the talent so that they can understand what it's going to take to actually make a difference at those next levels.
As we close out, could you leave us with a takeaway based on everything that you've seen, everything that you've heard, all the people that you have met? What would the takeaway be that we should take with us today before we close out?
Wow. Well, there are two, I think. One is to stay focused on the goal. And I can say that's been consistent for, you know, I cover a lot of career professionals, but even for the business professionals that we cover, the one thing that they actually have in common is staying focused. And the second piece is, and particularly for women, I like to advise women to stay passionate and not emotional. Because the emotion is what derails us every single time from whatever the goal is. And so, you know, the passion is all the exuberance and all the excitement and all the energy that you bring to your work. But, you know, the emotion is your personal connection to the outcome. And at the end of the day, you know, a senior level executive that we had interviewed several years ago said, at the end of the day, you know, a friend today can be a foe tomorrow when you're talking about the corporate space. And so, you know, just don't let it get into your head. Stay focused on the work, stay passionate, and you should see success.
Thank you so much, Sonia. For those of you who are not familiar with Sonia, make sure to grab that copy of Black Enterprise that comes out every month. She has a great column that it's a must read. They're also available on the website.
Yes. Thank you so much, Lori. I enjoyed this.
Thank you, Sonia. And thanks to all of our listeners tonight. Have a wonderful week ahead, everyone. Thank you.